This is Voices of Youth in Care, a radio series about the child welfare system produced by Youth in Care. This next documentary is called Reclaiming Our Stories. It confronts the Aboriginal experience in care. You can't talk about Aboriginals in the custody of child welfare services without talking about Aboriginal history, for it is not just Aboriginal land that has been stolen, but Aboriginal children. The residential schools stole Native children away from their communities. Many of these children later had their own children taken away in the so-called scoop of Aboriginal kids in the 60s. Today, if you speak to an Aboriginal child in care, it is likely that her parents and also her grandparents were taken from their communities. These communities and families are now trying to heal. Here are some of their voices.
Researching this documentary was an honor for me. Learning about the history of Aboriginal people and what Aboriginal people had to go through is a very heartfelt situation. In this piece, we're going to have different stories of survivors of the youth protection system, survivors of the Native residential schools, and survivors of the 60s scoop.
In our history books, Canadian history and all the rest of that, we were never taught about residential school and how it has affected Aboriginal people from across this country. And it wasn't something that just happened in the 1800s. I want people to understand that this went right up until the 80s. So as you listen to this, I want you to just get comfortable wherever you're sitting. Stop what you're doing. Don't try to write or anything as you listen to this. But just sit down, allow yourself to go inside yourself, close your eyes, and just listen to the story that I'm about to tell you and to picture it as you listen. I want you to picture yourself in your community, whatever community that is, and I want you to visualize the children. The children are what give us our energy. They're what give us our reason to be. They're the ones who teach us many wonderful things. I want you to picture their laughter, their joy, the way they play and run around, and just what they bring to us. And I want you to put them in the very center of the circle. Around the children, I want you to take all the women, the mothers, the aunties, all of the women, and place them around the children. The reason the women go next is because they're the ones who bring the children into the world. They're the ones who carry them for the 9 months and nurture them and take care of them. But as well as they grow up, women have the role of being the caretakers and the nurturers and the providers for the children. We give them some of the most important teachings. Around the women, the next layer of the circle is the men. The men also play a very important role in our communities. The men are the ones who will go out and they will provide. Now today it's not through hunting, it's through jobs and different ways like that, as well as women do it, but that's traditionally the men's role. As well, their job is to protect the women and the children, to make sure that we're both safe so the women could do their job as well as the children could do their job of joy and playing and teaching us what we need to learn. So the men are the next layer of the circle. I want you to picture all of the men of the community around. So picture your fathers, your uncles, your brothers in that part of the circle. The very next layer of the circle, and a vital layer that often gets neglected in today's society, are the elders. Around the men, the women, and the children are all the elders. And the reason they're there is because they're the ones who pass down traditions. They pass down the stories. They pass down the wisdom. They help to guide us as a community when we sometimes go off and lose our ways. And they help to bring us back. They're also what connect us back to who we are as Native people or as whatever nationality you are. When you think about it, it's your grandmothers and grandfathers that connect you back to who you are. Now that you're able to visualize this community, to feel the love, the strength, the warmth that this community is able to give in all the different depths of the circle, I want you to picture all of a sudden an outside force coming in. They're arriving by plane or by bus, whatever. And they get off, and they don't explain anything. They just come in. They push all your elders aside. They push through the elders. They don't listen to them. They knock even some of them over. They have no respect for them. They have no respect for their wisdom or their teachings. Next are the men, the ones who protect. They try to protect, but again, they push through the men. They force their way through them. The next level is the women. The women are the last stance before the children, and again, they push through the women. They push them aside. Once again, no respect, no caring. They grab the children, and they start to pull the children from the circle. They pull the children from the women's arms, from the men's arms, and finally from the elders' arms. And they put them on these buses and these planes, and they take them. They just leave with all of these children. And they don't tell you where they're going with them. They don't tell you when they'll be back. All they tell you is that we have to take them because you can't raise them properly. You can't take care of them the way that they need to be taken care of. You're not a civilized people. This is exactly what was done to the Aboriginal people in this country of Canada. And as you visualize this, as you open your eyes, hopefully you're left with a sense of astonishment, shock, pain, and hopefully anger, because this is what happened. After all this pain, after all this hurt that we've gone through, we have to look at how do we get better from it? How do we heal ourselves from it? As I touched on, a lot of people turn to drugs and alcohol, you know, in different self-destructive ways that they did to others. And I think that's important. When you learn to heal and learn to deal with stuff, you have to take a moment to look at what happened to me, but also what have I done? How have I continued this cycle? And from that, by talking about it, by crying about it, allowing yourself to feel it, I truly believe that's where the healing starts. Because before you can make the children strong, the parents have to get strong. And if the parents don't get strong, then the children are going to be strong and lost. And then a lot of anger builds up. So different ways of healing that I see working well are the healing circles, the talking circles, even just getting together and singing. One of our components at the treatment center is we would teach the clients different songs, and as well as they would make their own drum. They would go out and get the wood, and they would do it all themselves. And that was a powerful exercise. By picking up one's cultural identity, picking up old ways, even learning how to make some of the traditional meals that we have, it reconnects our spirit. And if we don't reconnect to our spirit, I don't think anything is really going to help us feel whole. You have to work on all the four aspects, the spiritual, the mental, the emotional, as well as the physical. And if one's out of balance, they're all going to be out of balance. So as a people, in order for us to heal, we have to let go of a lot of our hate. We have a right to be angry, but we don't have a right to go out and abuse others because we're angry. That's just not our ways. We have to forgive people who have hurt us, as well as we have to forgive ourselves for how we've hurt ourselves because of our past in order to move forward. We have to look at what is really our ways and what is not our ways. Alcohol, drugs, that's not our ways. That's not who we are. We're supposed to be of clear minds and have straight sight so that we could see things well. When we're in a stupor or high, we're not seeing clearly, we're not thinking clearly. And a lot of damage is being done to ourselves as well as everybody else around us. So I believe strongly in going for either counseling with elders or with a professional if you prefer that. Find good people who are going to help you on your way, as well as do ceremonies. Find out what ceremonies are out there and what you believe in.
The first two stories that you heard were from a dedicated, respected, lovely woman by the name of Natalie Lloyd. She works at the Native Friendship Center and helps Aboriginal youth and teaches them about the prevention of HIV and AIDS. I've spoken with this man by the name of Tom Deerhouse. He is a counselor on the reserve, Kahnawake, in Quebec. In this piece, he's talking about his mother and father-in-law and how they met and grew up in the Native residential schools.
I just might add, my wife's parents both grew up in residential school. They met there and graduated from there. They've been married. He's become an ordained deacon in the Catholic Church, so he has a leadership position. So it's interesting to see that this has come out of a residential school formation. I guess his forte, his strength is talking about healing and talking about reconciliation with Native communities and also non-Natives. It's all about building bridges with other groups, other church groups, whoever they may be, whoever asks for, you know, wants to know more about his background, which is Ojibwe.
In this next piece, you will be hearing from a man named Gary McFarland. He is a survivor of the 60s scoop.
My understanding is that within the 60s, and it kind of reached out to the 70s, there were a lot of Aboriginal children taken off reserves. And I don't have statistics or anything, but one person once told me that 35,000 kids out of Manitoba alone were taken within a five-year span. So that's a lot of people, you know, leaving the reserves. A lot of mothers expressed themselves how they were coerced into, you know, giving up their children. And a lot of people told me that their mothers thought they were dead. Things like this happened. So these children would be placed in foster care and eventually adopted out. So that's what happened in the 60s there. We call it the 60s scoop. I guess Indian agents or non-Native people on the reserve there. And obviously the difference in lifestyle, I guess, we have as us First Nations people easily could be we're not living up to certain standards, I guess. So a lot of different ways and excuses were made so that, you know, children were taken from the reserves. And a lot of people believe that it was, phase two to those residential schools, and that was a part of, you know, that assimilation process. Some people were told that children were born in sin because there was no, you know, declared father, and priests were at it, doctors were at it, everybody was at it. Those agents that lived on, Indian agents, I think the term was, that lived on reserve there and made a lot of decisions on behalf of the First Nations people. They were at it, people in the city, you know, everywhere, anywhere.
Love is something that you and I must have. We must have it because our spirits feed upon it. We must have it because without it, we become faint and weak. Without love, our self-esteem weakens. Without it, our courage fails. Without love, we can no longer look confidently at the world. We turn inward and begin to feed on our own personalities, and little by little, we destroy ourselves. With love, we are creative. With love, we march tirelessly. With love, and with love alone, we are able to sacrifice for others. This poem was written by the incredible Chief Dan George. Next story is by Sophie Claude Miller. She is a smart, well-respected woman that works at the Native Friendship Center. Sophie is a survivor of the youth protection system and has also experienced growing up without a father. Here is her story.
was telling him, oh, I'm looking for my dad, did you ever heard of him? And then I told his name and stuff. He's like, oh, I do know him. He's really well known in the Cree environment. Because as I said, he worked for the Cree Regional Authority, and he's a teacher and is also involved with Nabakatuk and Dumtar. So he's really, really involved. And so he said, oh, he has an office in Montreal. Really? Oh, what's the address? So he gave me all the address and everything, the contacts. And I went over there the first time. He wasn't there, but I left him a letter just saying, hi, been looking for you. So I waited a couple of months. And then in December, I went to his office another time with another letter. But he was there. And I knew that he knew my name, and he knew that I existed. It's not like as if I knew that he knew. And so it was kind of weird. And he had kept my letter, the first letter I brought him. He had kept it really preciously on his desk. And he was just like, he just explained to me, listen, I just didn't know what to do with that. Because he's been in residential schools, especially the males that went in residential schools don't really know how to be a dad. They didn't experience that themselves, so they just don't know. They're really uncomfortable with their emotions, very uncomfortable with their relationships, especially kind of family relationships. They're really, really, they don't have those skills. He's a good person, but it's just that he just doesn't deal with that. So he just told me like he was feeling like really, I thought he was as nervous as I was, and he just told me, well, oh, I didn't know what to do with that, And so, well, I understand. But he was asking me, why didn't you look for me earlier than that? I explained to him, well, listen, now I was looking for you and I made all the process and stuff, but it's because I was ready to hear anything. I didn't know if my father was homeless or if he was alive or anything, because I knew that when I was really young, my mom always told me, like, my father was an alcoholic, because I know that my father was at that time alcoholic, and he would call my mom, like, around 4 or 5 in the morning and saying, okay, I'm gonna bring Bibi Shop North stuff, and my mom was so scared. So she just moved and didn't tell them where she went with that. And my mom was also, when I was in foster care, she was really nervous that my dad would try to contact me or something. And she was like, she didn't want that to happen. She was really scared of that. Well, I was just so happy to see that he wasn't homeless, and also he had quit drinking. So I was just so happy to see that he was doing well, and just, for me, just being able to put a face on their dad, that was just a very, very big thing. I felt so spoiled. And just to go have supper with my dad, even though if it's half an hour, I felt just, wow, like I dreamed of that so long. Like it was just really painful for me just in the past. I didn't realize because I was like somehow used to it, but it was really something to be able to have the chance to sit in front of my dad and call him and talk to him about different things and try to get to know him a bit. So that was really special, and I felt really spoiled. He's not an alcoholic anymore.
That circle of life is our Mother Earth. She's round. She's a sphere. So within that circle, there's life that grows. The first life was the elements, fire, water, earth, and air. The second children were the tree people, plant people, and the root people. The third children were the animal nation. And the fourth children were us, the family of humanity, we call it. So that's what this circle represents, that greater circle of life.
In Aboriginal history, many youth, generation after generation, were never told about Native residential schools, the 60 Scoop, and a lot of the troubles that Aboriginal people had to go through in North America. As for myself, I'm a survivor of the youth protection system. Not knowing about my culture and my traditions and my ancestry was hard to deal with while I was growing up. Many children that grow up without knowing who they are, tend to be lost and not have respect for their elders or themselves or people around them. I want you to understand that as a people, we need to get together, the mothers, the fathers, the elders, and form that circle around our children. To keep them safe, we need to teach them about our cultures and our traditions. We need to protect them from the evilness that surrounds us all. So let's get together and form that circle around our children, our beloved children, once again, so that we can keep the circle strong.